WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
Well, folks, that old harvest moon is shining down extra bright on the old red barn tonight, and for a very special reason.
Before there was the Grand Old Opry, there was the National Barn Dance.
It's ninth birthday. It's 470th Happy Hayloft Party from the old WLS Hayloft in Chicago.
The variety show combined rural and folk music, theatrical skits, and comedy. It's credited with popularizing the country music genre, and it got its start 100 years ago in Chicago. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. To mark the anniversary of the first episode hitting the airwaves, The Hideout is hosting an event this Saturday. Hey, hey, the gang's all here, a Chicago barn dance. Saturday's event imagines what an episode of the show would sound like in 2024. It'll bring together musicians, historians, and performers, and it will air live on WFMT. I sat down with a panel of people who made this weekend's event possible. Paul DiRica is a Chicago historian who produced the event with Pocket Guide to Hell. Jeffrey Thomas is the musical director for the show, and Lawrence Peters, founder of the Lawrence Peters Outfit, is the event's house band. Paul starts us off with more on how popular the barn dance was at its height.
It was a hugely popular show.
Yeah.
So it premieres in April of 1924, and it has a very kind of humble beginning because radio in itself is just sort of coming into being. In fact, if you look at the listing in the newspaper for the day, it said it was going to be an old-time fiddler's program.
Mm-hmm.
But by the following week, they've already come up with the name, the barn dance, called the Evening Barn Dance. And by week three, they're the National Barn Dance. And through the 1920s, all the way up through the 1950s, you see it growing in popularity, both locally and across the country, and really kind of helping to create country music as we know it today.
Yeah. Jeffrey, you had a neighbor whose family member was in a band that played on the show?
Yes, his father was the bass player. Lester Shine.
Yeah. I mean, you had to have heard some stories about Mr. Lester.
Oh, yeah, many stories. So that's how I actually found out about the barn dance, just hanging out with my neighbor, meeting him. And he knew I was a musician, and he told me about his father being the bass player of the barn dance, told me about the barn dance, told me some fun stories about... After the barn dance, all the musicians would go over to one of their houses and play poker all night. And my neighbor told me that he knew his dad did well when there'd be a stack of quarters the next day and he could go get some ice cream.
That sounds about right. Now, I recently spoke with Francesca Royster. She's the author of Black Country Music, Listening for Revolutions. She'll be participating in the show on Saturday. And here, she talked to me about her grandmother. Her grandmother moved to Chicago from the South and also listened to the barn dance show. So here's a little bit of Francesca.
She was a big fan. She loved to listen regularly. And it was a way to kind of connect to the South, to country culture in the middle of Chicago. But I also found out that she was teased for it, you know, by my grandfather and by her neighbors. It was something that she kind of did, you know, on the down low a little bit. Coming from the South and being here in Chicago, there was really a pressure to assimilate, to kind of be part of Northern culture. Country music was thought of as, you know, not as sophisticated and, you know, to become like the right kind of Black person, urban Black person, you know, you were supposed to listen to jazz or R&B and urban blues. And so to me, that tells me just the complex ways that Black listeners entered into the country music culture.
So I admit when I was talking to her, that part about getting teased for listening to the show, that kind of surprised me. But there are reports from the first station manager of WLS, where the show debuted, that Sears Roebuck, who owned the station and officials, they were upset at the, quote, disgraceful, lowbrow music. But the overwhelming audience approval for the show is what kind of kept it going. Now, does any of that sound familiar to you all? Lawrence, I saw you nodding a little bit when Francesca was speaking.
Oh my God, it's so complicated. The complexity of country music and, it's fascinating. I have a lot of African-American friends who have talked about how their families loved country music, and the older ones would listen to the Grand Ole Opry.
And
that they just loved it. And because they heard, even though it was, you know, sort of acknowledged as a white, quote unquote, music, there's all that African-American influence in it.
Yeah.
And they heard it and they loved the songs, the stories, like all that stuff is in there.
Right.
And so, but it just, the idea of somebody being made fun of for that is just brutal.
Yeah. I was teased, Paul.
You know, I would just add that, you know, you mentioned that WLS was owned by Sears. WLS stood for World's Largest Store.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they were hesitant at first because they thought it was like a lowbrow sort of art form, what they realized, being Sears, is that they had a huge rural audience that appreciated this music, and also a large number of people now living in Chicago who had come from rural communities. And they not only had to create content for their station, but they were in the business of selling radios.
Yeah.
So, right. So people needed something to tune into
right. When
they were out there. And so there was a really good synergy between, you know, Sears being able to kind of sell their radios kind of across the country, and then people being able to tune in and listen to the Barn Dance on Saturdays.
Let's listen to an early song that aired on Barn Dance. This is Fit as a Fiddle by the Hoosier Hotshots. It's taking everything for me to not get up out of my seat right now. Jeffrey, a big smile came on your face when the song first started. What memories did that bring back?
Well, I was listening to it trying to figure out what that sound was. What is that?
Slide whistle?
My producer and I were trying to figure it out too. We were like, is it the flute?
Exactly. Hearing that makes me actually excited me because of the even just the diversity of sounds that could be played on that on the radio at the time, and that's what brought me a big smile. Was like, what is that?
What
noise?
What is that sound?
What is that beautiful weird sound?
I'm just tapping my toes over
exactly.
here. Well, at this time, you bring a good point, Jeffrey, because at this time there were many different styles of music that were played on the Barn Dance show, and it wasn't called country yet, right, Lawrence? I mean, what were some of the styles, though, that we could hear on the program?
It was a completely different landscape. Yeah. From my understanding, that it was less segmented and compartmentalized, and so it was just sort of rural music and, you know, city music or whatever, like jazz. Like,
folk.
Yeah, there were some things that were definitely like jazz, of course, and ragtime and that kind of thing, but I think it was a lot looser a genre, and I think that a lot of things fit in that, which is really cool.
There was a huge migration of folks from rural areas to cities at this time. So, Paul, I want you to talk a bit about how missing home and that desire to connect to the music, how that created a market for Barn Dance.
It did create a market that was local, but then that also extended out into rural communities as well, and allowed the people living here in Chicago to connect back to their pasts, but it also allowed people in rural communities to feel some kind of connection to urban areas. And one of the things that, you know, I found fascinating and a really good history to check out is Mark Reno's Country and Midwestern, and he writes about this, is how in a lot of these rural communities, maybe one family in a given area had a radio set. Mm. So people would come from all around on Saturday nights to listen together to the Barn Dance, and that really helped to kind of create a sense of community. And in some cases, the same pattern played out here within Chicago.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm curious when it officially became country music.
When would you say, Lawrence?
I forget I always forget the guy's name. The guy that did the Bristol Sessions, I believe, is the guy that termed, he split it into hillbilly music mm-hmm. and race records. And so he ethnically and color-wise divided the two into different things and then marketed them separately. And that was my understanding of how that went. And that was around that time, I think. Mm. I think the Bristol Sessions, do you remember when the
It was a little bit after, but yeah.
Yeah, shortly after that. So,
mm.
yeah.
Well, Barn Dance, as we know, eventually went off the airwaves. But as I mentioned earlier, you all wanted to take the format and think about what it would sound like now. Where'd you get this idea from, Paul?
I think just, you know, looking at the long history of the Barn Dance. So, you know, it goes on the air in April of 1924. It runs on WLS all the way till 1960. Then it's on for GN for a decade. And it's just kind of amazing that a program was on the air that long.
Sure. Yeah.
Through all those different decades and engaging all those different kind of people. And so it just was a simple kind of leap of imagination. The Grand Ole Opry is still here, right? The Grand Ole Opry goes on the air a couple years after the Barn Dance. It's originally called the WSM Barn Dance, right? So you can see the way in which it's indebted to what happened here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so it was just like, yeah, what if it never went off the air? What would it look like today? What? How could we celebrate the Chicago country music scene that exists today and the past century worth of music?
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Well, now for the part that I've been waiting for. Jeffrey, you and Lawrence, you came up with a theme song for your event this weekend. Hey, hey, the gang's all here, a Chicago barn dance. Why don't you play a little bit of it for us?
Hold on.
Oh, he's got to get his washboard on. That's an electric washboard, folks.
Fancy instruments coming out.
Can you give a little note? 1, 2, 3, 4. Everybody gather around and clap your hands. Hey, hey, the gang's all here. Just tap your toes if you don't want to dance. Hey, hey, the gang's all here. Gonna tell some tales and sing some songs. We'll all be friends before the night is gone. Let's get started because we haven't got long. Hey, hey, the gang's all here. Hey, hey, the gang's all here. Hey, hey, the gang's all here.
Yay!
A little loose.
I love that. Why don't you talk, Jeffrey, about how this song helps capture the spirit of the event?
Well, Lawrence wrote it. Lawrence wrote all the words and came up with that melody. And I wanted to, I was already working on a sort of a chord progression based on a Eldon Shamblin, Texas Playboys kind of groove. Mm-hmm. And once Lawrence sent me his version of it, I just knew I could just, this will just map right on top of it.
Nice.
So it had to be short, had to be punchy, had to talk about dancing and being all here together and having a good time and be real short and punchy.
Yeah.
So we did kind of our own little sort of acoustic version of it, but at the show, we're going to have everybody sing. Yeah,
all the bells and whistles.
The lyrics are still in my mouth. I'm still singing, hey, the gang's all here.
I appreciate that.
So it worked for sure.
Thank you.
Excellent.
All right, let's listen again to author Francesca Roycer. She says this event provides an opportunity
to think about the histories of exclusion, both kind of the self-segregation of African-Americans from this culture, but also the ways that the industry itself was racially segregated and unwelcoming for Black listeners. So this this reimagining gives us a chance to think about, okay, what if we knew what we knew then that we know now in terms of the importance of African-American roots in country music, participation and fandom, and try to rethink the space.
Yeah, does she have a point there, Paul?
She does, very much so. And I think that's what really kind of guided us as we were developing this program. We wanted to take a full and complete look at the history of the Barn Dance, and we wanted to also take a full and complete look at what country music is in the city today. And I think, you know, Jeff did such an amazing job. When I said, don't think about it as like being in the past, but think about like, what would the show look like if it were on in 2024? Mm-hmm. Who would be the musicians you'd reach out to? Jeff did such an amazing job in getting all these people to join us on this project.
Yeah, talk more about that. You are the event's musical director, Jeffrey. So how do you go about thinking about something like this and making it sound like 2024?
I knew if I had some key country players in there, Justin Brown on pedal steel, Matt Gandersky on country lead guitar, and of course, Lawrence Peters. He's been my guru throughout this whole thing. But I also wanted to look out a new country artist, Andrew Saw. He's singing a song. Nicky Morgan's going to be on it. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to throw in some wild cards. Marvin Tate, who's going to do his version of Mule Skinner Blues. Hawk Nebula is going to do his version of Wichita Lineman. And I picked a lot of musicians that were both young and new upcoming musicians that can improvise in the jazz scene, as well as a very versatile Foley artist, Brent Roman, who was from Cirque du Soleil. And he's got a whole bag of tricks that he's going to be busting out for us.
Nice.
At the show. But it was a deliberate choice to sort of look at the broad range of musical talent here in Chicago and sort of fit them into this style in some way, yeah, with some key country players too.
So you mentioned a few artists there, Jeffrey, and I think we've got some a little taste of that Nicky Morgan.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Nicky's from North Carolina, but got started performing here in Chicago. She's been quoted as saying that storytelling is important to her and to the genre of country. So let's listen to Water to Wine off her EP 30-something.
And what do you do when the seed you knew would outgrow you has somehow fallen through? And where do you go?
What a voice.
Mm-hmm, about it.
Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, her point of, you know, storytelling and its importance to this genre. I remember just years ago when I hadn't really listened to too much country music and just hearing, oh, but you got to, because they tell stories like no other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, for
you
sure.
You agree?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I think it's the storytelling genre. It really is. And what's remarkable, so particular discipline within country music is honky tonk, which is so like Hank Williams and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's a form to it, which I really like. It's kind of like you have to fit your story in a lean and mean way within this structure.
That's right.
And you really have to think about what you want to say and you can't waste the space. It's kind of like writing a sonnet or something like that. It has to all fit in the right spot. But it's just, it comes from traditions of people keeping, you know, cultural histories and stories and lore alive, but then also just daily stuff. I mean, the wonderful thing about honky tonk is that it's about, it's nightlife and day life. So, you know, there's a lot about, you know, divorce and whatever. And it's kind of comical that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, jabs about how country music is about your dog and whatever, but it's about your, it's
I've
about,
heard
you know,
that too.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But it's about, you know, I miss my home. I'm single now, I'm divorced, whatever. The kids don't like me, you know, all these kinds of things, which can be, you know, hilarious to look at from the outside, but it's like, well, that's some real heartfelt stuff. Mm-hmm. And it can be really beautiful. And I've heard some just mind blowingly, incredibly beautiful songs about just talking about being a human being. So.
Oh, for sure.
Three chords in the truth.
There you go. Exactly right.
I want to listen to another one of the artists featured this weekend. This is Los Gallos, and the song is Nueva Vida on their new self-titled album. Wonderful. Jeffrey, tell us more about this group and the story you're hoping to tell by having them be part of the event.
Well, the Norteño sound is something that I grew up in listening to in Texas, and my next door neighbors have wonderful parties with large band, and I knew I wanted to, if I was going to help tell the story or help bring in the sound of a new Chicago country sound, certainly the Hispanic influence and the Mexican influence had to be a part of it as well. And Los Gallos, I saw them at the Hideout and was just floored.
Yeah,
just
no, they're great.
Moved by them. And
I went down a rabbit hole watching a bunch of their performances this morning on YouTube.
It getting them in the show was really meaningful to me to have them there. It's going to be a little tricky turnover, but we're going to make it work to get them up there to do a good song. They're doing their song, Michoacan.
Ooh.
It's gonna be a wonderful, wonderful moment. So,
and Paul, you know, there seems to be this overall line of continuity from the early days of barn dance to today's music scene, right? Look, talk briefly about how some original participants kind of went on to teach the next generation of musicians.
That's very true. A lot of the musicians who performed on the Barn Dance ended up staying in the Chicago area. A lot of them became, you know, music instructors or helped to kind of establish places that we still have today, like the Old Town School of Folk Music, and would perform there.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they taught the next generation, and then the generation after that taught some of the individuals who will be performing with us. And there are some direct links between the Barn Dance and the people they'll be performing on Saturday. So we've got a band called the Girls of the Golden West.
Nice.
One of its members, her great aunt, was in a band called Girls of the Golden West.
Nice.
That performed on the Barn Dance. Our square dance caller, Paul Collins, amazing guy.
Yeah, there will be a square dance in the middle of the two live shows.
His grandfather took him to the Barn Dance. It used to be performed live for many, many years at a place called A Street Theater. He remembers going with his grandfather to see it, becoming really kind of interested in the music, and then going with his parents to do square dancing at YMCA's on the city's south side.
Oh, nice.
And he's been a caller since he was a teenager.
Nice.
That is super cool. Well, we'll leave it there. I want to go out, though, on one more song. This one's from Andrew Saw, who's been dubbed Chicago's queer country crooner.
Mm-hmm.
This is Little Lamb. We have been speaking with Paul DeRica, who's a Chicago historian who produced Hey Hey, The Gang's All Here, a Chicago barn dance, Jeffrey Thomas, who's the musical director for the show, and Lawrence Peters, who's founder of the Lawrence Peters Outfit, who's also in the event's house band. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. Tune back in on Saturday. We'll drop a bonus episode, our full conversation with Francesca Royster, who's author of Black Country Music, Listening for Revolutions, where we'll chat about Beyoncé's new album, Cowboy Carter. Now, if you like this conversation, please consider leaving us a rating and subscribing. It helps listeners like you find our show. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Let's talk again soon. All alone.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.